What's up, world? Welcome to the first episode of my brand new podcast. I live in Cleveland. That's me. I'm Clevey. And this is a show where I like to take a look at things going on in art, entertainment, and pop culture and try to find life's little lessons. Or at least try to learn something about myself and the world that we inhabit. Thanks for visiting, and I hope you dig the show today. We're living in a strange time, wouldn't you agree? I mean, if you're listening to this while scrolling through your newsfeed, it probably won't take you very long before you read a headline that incites some type of emotional tingle. We seem, as a society, divided, and always looking for the next opportunity to scream out our points of view from the rooftops and watch them rain down meaningless upon a sea of opposition. It's no wonder that across the country, people are looking for ways to escape. Add a little July heat to the equation, and everyone's favorite destination is in front of the screen. Movies and television have become our refuge, telling us stories old and new, leading us to ask tough and sometimes uncomfortable questions about ourselves and the problems that we share as human beings. Now I'm nervous that I might be coming in too hot for my first episode, but hopefully you'll stick with me. Well, I was listening to one of my favorite podcasts. It's a delightful show called Fat Man Beyond. It's hosted by the wonderful Kevin Smith and Mark Bernardin. They're two fantastic creators in the geek space. Maybe you've heard of them. Anyway, they started to talk about a new Marvel show called The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And I can only assume that unless you've been living under a rock for the past 10 years, that you know who the Avengers are and everything that goes into that Marvel universe, yada, yada, yada. And just in case you didn't know, the Captain America that we've all known and loved for the past decade is no more. He's old, and he's passed the shield on to Falcon. There, you're caught up. So, the speculation was casted that the crux of that show would be that the government does not want Sam Wilson, the Falcon, to be the new Captain America. And I was immediately fascinated by that idea. I mean, keep in mind, there's no context or proof that this is what that show is going to be about. And I'm willing to bet that it's way off base. And, like, I can already think of plenty of reasons why the Falcon shouldn't be the new Captain America. Like, for starters, he's not a super soldier. Doesn't have any powers. How's he going to throw that shield? He doesn't have the body strength. The upper body strength. Any body strength. I mean, I guess he has some body strength, but and some would argue that he doesn't have the experience of a 100-year-old man. Granted, Cap was frozen in ice for 70, but you get what I'm saying. Even with all that being said, without any provocation, I found it interesting that the first reason that popped into my head, the idea that sparked my interest to explain the government stance, was that they didn't want Sam Wilson, a black face, as the face of America. And not only as the face of America, but as the ideal protector of our nation. Whoa. Could you imagine if that show took on that idea? The concept that in 2019 or 2020, whenever this show comes out, that the world as a whole may never be ready to embrace a black face as a symbol of truth, justice, and the American way. And by the way, you don't have to at me with the, we had a black president and America wouldn't find issue, because I'm sorry, we're living in two different worlds here. In a world full of superhumans, when Thanos shows up, we're not calling Obama. And so that idea intrigued me. And also that idea of how Sam might feel, trying to live up to a massive figure surrounded by a world that decided they didn't want him before he even stepped into those shoes. What an interesting and poignant take, I thought. And while the transition of power from Steve Rogers to Sam is guaranteed not to be as dramatic as I surmised, it kind of reminds me of a controversial progression that we're seeing a lot of in mainstream art and media today. And that's the race and or gender swapping of quote-unquote iconic characters. And that, my friends, is the meat and potatoes of what I wanted to delve into today, just for a little bit. I want to be part of your world. One of the poor, unfortunate souls to get all that hate on the internet. That's right. Let us dive in under the sea to talk a little bit about what the internet has dubbed as Black Ariel. Are you still with me? Did I come in too hot? So in the latest live-action reboot, Disney casted African-American actress and singer Halle Bailey of Grown-ish fame to be the lead in their upcoming Little Mermaid film. Where in the 1989 animated... Holy shit, 1989? I'm old. I'm feeling it. Feeling it in my bones. I thought that was 90s, but I was wrong. My life's a lie. No. In the 1989 animated feature, she was drawn as a rambunctious young white 16-year-old with voluminous red hair, bright enough to stop traffic. And if you're like me, and old enough to remember the Disney Renaissance of animated movies, you remember that Little Mermaid was a huge deal, standing as a tentpole in the revival, soon to be followed by classics like Aladdin and Beauty and the Beast. So you can imagine a little bit of the stir that was caused when this news came up. There's comments upon comments of ruined childhoods and hashtag not my Ariels. It leads me to wonder why we take these made-up stories so seriously. Why does it matter that the two leads, decades apart, are not aesthetically accurate? Is this an issue of race or an issue of nostalgia? And the answer may just be a little bit of both. And while I'm not naive enough to think that I can solve that problem of mythic proportions, let's face it, this is a free podcast that just started and it's way above my pay grade, which is zero. I'd like to introduce an idea into that conversation to think about. And that is the idea of essence. So in philosophy, essence is defined as a property or a group of properties of something without which it would not exist or be what it is. And my favorite example of this is from the wonderful philosopher Stephen West, where he says about non-essential properties, and I'm paraphrasing here, to think about a toothbrush. It can be made of plastic or bamboo or be metal or wood or whatever. But as long as it has those little bristle things at the end, then it's still a toothbrush. And I'm going to come back to this idea in just a second, but first, I'd like to read the synopsis of The Little Mermaid. And if you don't mind, it comes from Disney.com, by the way, and it reads, "The Little Mermaid tells the story of Princess Ariel, a curious, free-spirited mermaid who courageously follows her dreams and embarks on a life-changing adventure to find what she truly treasures. From her home under the sea, Ariel longs to explore the wonders of the world above the waves. Determined to make her dreams come true, Ariel strikes a bargain with the evil sea witch Ursula and trades her beautiful voice so that she could be part of the human world." Now look, I don't think that there's any problem with someone who's in love with the way that things were when they were a child and wants to see that vision writ large in a new way. Like, for instance, I like Bumblebee more as the VW bug than as a Camaro. But I also don't think that there's a problem with changing things to help reflect the world as we see it now. We changed. Let's go back to that toothbrush. Back to the essence of what makes that character so enjoyable. To be curious and carefree. To fall in love and be willing to make sacrifices to go after your dreams. Those are her essential properties. That's why we love Ariel. That's why we connect to her, because in some way, we've all been there. We've all stood in the same place as her. What do you call them? Oh, feet. It's those qualities that are the bristles. That's what matters. Those characteristics, however, are not inherent to white redheaded teenagers. Those belong to everyone. Now, don't get me wrong. There are some characters where race and gender are absolutely essential. To steal from the aforementioned Mark Bernard, it makes sense for a Gotham City billionaire vigilante with Andrew Carnegie-style wealth to be a white dude. I don't know of any other culture in America that has that kind of wealth. Just as much as it makes sense for the king of the African nation of Wakanda to be a black guy. Those characters wouldn't make sense any other way because race plays a significant role in the lore of those characters. Ariel, however, is a mermaid that happens to have been drawn white. And I mean, it could be because of the painstaking research performed by the Imagineers to stick to the author's Danish roots in the source material and all that, insert why is Sebastian a Jamaican crab. Or it could be because the writer's room in 1989 was filled with white faces, and the first rule of writing is to write what you know. I think of Alexandre Dumas, a black man and author of The Three Musketeers. Now, if he were alive today to adapt his work into film, how different would we picture that swashbuckling trio in our mind's eye? You see, the truth is that for as long as cinema's been around, the people who've always had access to tell any kind of story has been, well, let's just say a homogenized society. And opportunities for many marginalized groups to see themselves as heroes is a relatively new progression. For faces that have been subjugated into long-standing stereotypes and false narratives, it's a wonderful change of pace to see more representation enacted in a positive light. And when race or gender are not essential to the character, it should be okay to make more room at that table. Now, I've heard the argument of why can't they, let's just say they as Disney, create new characters and tell new stories? Well, some would argue that the reimagining and retelling of stories, especially fairy tales, have been in the game of swapping details for a long time. For instance, perhaps the oldest telling of the Cinderella story is Rhodopis, from the Greek author Strabo. This version dates back to the 1st century and tells the story of a Greek slave girl in Egypt. Look, all this is to say that I think that it's natural that stories eventually evolve to reflect our current life, our time, our movements, etc. And unfortunately, our entertainment industry is set on remaking and rebooting things because name recognition brings money. It's show business, and it's all about the Benjamins, baby. Let's face it. As much as people complain about there being no original ideas, those same voices are choosing to spend their money watching The Lion King instead of smaller independent films like Booksmart. Now, there may be some validity to the argument of whether or not changes like these fuel a politically correct agenda. And maybe they do play a part. Again, I don't believe that all people who want something closer to the Disney originals is any less progressive than those that are full Team Hallie. I understand that disappointment. But to those who claim that their childhoods have been somehow torn asunder, I assure you they haven't. Check the photo book, McFly. Those feelings you had the first time you tried to comb your hair with a fork, those are still yours to keep. Forever. Just like the original versions of these films, they're not going anywhere. What I'm trying to say is, stories don't belong to our nostalgia. These stories have lasted this long because of their ability to fit into whatever skin we as storytellers choose to put them in. And there's a lot of power there. A generation of children will get to see themselves under the sea partaking in adventures the same way we did when we were kids. And isn't that the real point? To instill our children with the wonder and the whimsy of these fantastical journeys? Look, we could still learn to be courageous, we can still learn how to follow our dreams, we could still be friends with flounders and seagulls, and we can do all of these things, even with a black Ariel. Because sometimes, it's about the message, and not always about the messenger. Now, I promise this podcast won't just be about race or politics, far from it. It's not really my bag, but it was just something that piqued my interest. But I'm also interested to hear your takes on stories like these. Like, do you guys disagree? Do you agree? Hit me up at cleavetheblackguy@gmail.com or any of the socials. I'm at the same name. That's Cleave the Black Guy, CleveTheBlackC, no K, guy. I've been Cleavy. It's been a pleasure to serve you. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other. Thanks for visiting Cleveland. Y'all come back now, you hear?